You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are and live with all your faults. I wanna wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all, so why don't you smile?
Joining me is Alex Holland. Alex, what's your right now on your what's your go-to playlist? Who's on it?
Oh man, honestly, right now it's the Hamilton soundtrack. I've been listening to that a lot lately.
Dude, would you get over that already? You're like a Hamilton maniac.
I am. I was for a long time, then I kind of tapered off.
And now you're back?
And when it got released on Disney Plus, so I was able to watch it for the first time. I'd never seen it before.
Oh.
And it got the gears turning all over again. So lately it's been a lot of Hamilton. But surprisingly enough, a mix of Hamilton and Macklemore, I think. Like a weird mix. The most old white guy versions of rap that I could find, I guess.
Okay. This is my – I named this. I made it yesterday. And it's like all-time favorites, okay, for me. It's just loaded, chock full of hits, right? Springsteen, Terry Clark, country singer, Rihanna, John Cicada, Hal Ketchum, Blake Shelton, 38 Special, Roseanne Cash, Simon & Garfunkel, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Rihanna again, OAR.
OAR is one of my oldest and longest favorite bands. I love OAR.
You could drop the old out of it. Patty Griffin, B.B. King, right? Jackson Brown, Van Morrison, Toby Keith, Bruce Hornsby and the Range, Santana, Cheap Trick, Elton John.
See, your list is a lot cooler than mine. I can give you the first couple of bands off mine. Lynyrd Skynyrd, Journey, Toto, Neil Diamond, John Denver, Billy Joel. Mine doesn't get cooler. Tom Petty, Boston.
Pink, right? Gwen Stefani, Amy Winehouse.
Yours is like more contemporary than mine even. Mine's Steve Miller Band, Creedence Clearwater, Aerosmith, Phil Collins.
Ed Sheeran, Luis Fonsi. Luis Fonsi sings.
I'm not familiar.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you how I found it. So I'm laying on the couch. Colleen and I are doing nothing one night, and I don't. We start talking, right? And so We were talking about YouTube, and so it's like, what's the most watched video ever on YouTube? And so yeah, what would it be? And so I do a search, right?
Yeah.
The most watched video ever on YouTube has 8 billion plus views.
That's an absolutely – I don't know what the video is, but that's an astonishing and terrifying number to me. Whatever it is, nobody should have seen it 8 billion times.
And I thought – like exactly. It's a music video done by this guy, Luis Fonsi. This is what it sounds like. Miss Universe is in it, which doesn't hurt it.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt, right?
But he was trying to make a dance video. It's got a beat. Oh, no. And she's pretty easy on the eyes, I think the way. It's called Despacito. And I said, Colleen, have you seen this? She looked like, no. So now when she listens to it, I'm like, yeah, who's the coolest dad you know? She's like, stop it, please. But,
I can speak to that because I have heard of Despacito on Reddit probably 10 million times and never heard the song or seen the video. You are schooling me on what the hip kids are all about.
Well, let me tell you, you will get hipper and cooler as your kids go through their teenage years if you pay attention. And you listen to their music and you say, who is that? And they say, that's Justin Bieber. And you're like, no, say it's not him. Because I don't want to like him, but my ears told me that I like that song. Who's that? Oh, that's Rihanna, Dad. I like Rihanna, right? And so now we argue whether Rihanna is a better singer than than Beyonce. And I think it's not even close. Rihanna crushes her.
I'm with you on this one, actually.
Yeah. Hey, because you're smart. The my daughter, whose birthday it is today, Catherine, she throws a fit when I go there. So I go there on a relatively regular basis.
That seems perfectly appropriate.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'll be playing music. Like, it's like, they like, dude, where do you, why are you listening to this music? I'm like, because I'm like really cool. Because, you know, I mean, you know, I constantly get asked, were you prior enlisted? And I always say, no, man, I'm just really fucking cool, man. And they're like, oh, my God. And then they'll say, I told you not to ask him, man. Now we're going to have to listen to that shit now? I'm like, look, I get asked it all the time. Because when you do cool shit as an officer, they don't believe you. Like, you could just be like an officer, right? And be like, understand and get them. And because let me tell you, here's how I ran my company. On Friday, we'd start inspecting at 09. We'd inspect vehicles because I was an LAR company commander. You know, we'd inspect, the scouts would lay their shit out. We'd inspect the maintenance bay. You know, we'd inspect. And what we inspected was on the daily, weekly, or monthly, right, preventative maintenance services checklist. So if you just did your job, right, and we start the inspection at 9, we'd normally be done by noon. And then guess what happened?
You could very feasibly get secured.
Fuck yeah. So you link hard work to early limbo and 29 Palms.
Oh, man.
The swoop was on. And so guess what? Record numbers in terms of maintenance and cleanliness. How did that happen? Because you don't have your head up your ass. And so they would ask me, like, hey, sir, are you prior enlisted? I'm like, no, man, I'm just fucking cool.
But I can speak to this personally from my own experiences in 29 Palms, where I worked at in headquarters battalion at the IPAC in 29 Palms, and that is not how the IPAC operates. The IPAC operates like, not first and foremost, they're set working hours because people need to be able to know when they can come to the office. That's fine, but like on a Friday at 16:30, when your shop has been done, you've already, you know, gone through, because a big thing is DFRs, which are basically data entry failures. And that's your biggest priority on a Friday. Similar to you guys making sure that your equipment is properly maintained, right, we're making sure everyone's paychecks are properly maintained. So you'd get your DFRs done. You'd be on top of everything. You'd have like your notes set up for your first meeting on Monday. And then one of the other shops, you know, they're still buried and they're behind. They'll probably be working until 1900. That means none of us get secured until 1900.
Why?
I will say that because of that, I became very good at working other shops' DFRs because I was good at it. And I'd be like, I want to go home. I'll do your work for you. But yeah, that's how it always was. If one, you know, I understand and I can appreciate the, if one of us is working, we're all working. But when you hit like 2000 on Friday night and my wife is texting me, my sense of humor about it really diminishes.
No, I mean, and so to me, when you're doing that, it's like, okay, find a better way. I mean, yeah, let's work, you know, let's work late on Wednesday and Thursday after, if we have to, after we field day. But when you're fucking around on Friday like that.
See, and that was always my approach as a platoon sergeant. See, but if
you would have been like me, prior enlisted, you would get that shit, man. You would get that shit. Or hypothetically, just really fucking cool. Or a limbo hog and just want to go on limbo yourself. Like, why
Which
do
I think has always been me to this day.
Oh, look, you're talking to the persona. Why are you so hell on this stuff? Like, dude, do you think I want to be hanging out here on Friday? No.
Absolutely.
Let's go. Let's get this
Although,
shit done.
Now I would argue that you're just like me. Now you will not find a day where I'm not working because, unfortunately, for both of us, we're the ones in charge of how much we work, which means we just always work.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, let me just tell you. I want to invite you someplace. I just spent the last 8 days up in Montana.
I have always wanted to go to Montana. What was it like?
I'm going to bring you there. Well, there's a group of former Marines. They're called the Bar X Project, and they've been getting Marines together for years. Well, they've evolved it. And what they do is they get groups of guys that have served together and women that have served together. And they go up to Montana, and they host them at these unbelievable places. I mean, and Montana's – it might be the prettiest state in the country. I mean, I know people say Alaska is, and, you know, California's natural beauty, blah, 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 blah. But Montana, man, it's just breathtakingly beautiful. So anyway, so I get a call from them this past winter. Hey, guy named James Moran. Hey, Mac, I listen to your show, and we do this thing, and we think it would be your thing with what we do would be off the hook. And I said, oh, it will, motherfucker. And he was like, what? I said, you heard me right, okay? And he says, were you prior enlisted? I said, yeah, I was. Can you tell by the way I talk? And so I use that as an out. I use that as an out sometimes. Don't blame me. It was the system. So he says, well, you know, and he and I talked. He said, well, you know, I want to put a conference to call together with my board, and then, you know, you can tell them this stuff. So he does. And so it's like they get me for the board, you know, via Zoom or whatever the hell we were doing. And they're like, okay, Matt, go. 20 minutes later, I said, okay, I'm done. And they were like, nobody said a word. I said, hello? And they're like, yeah, we're a bit stunned. I said, look, and they were telling me, so some, Alex, you know this, some of these guys haven't seen each other since the war, right? Yeah. Because they were medevaced, and when everybody came home, they were in Bethesda and couldn't get there, and then guys EAS, PCS, and do all the other things. So the last time they might have seen each other was when somebody's laying there bleeding them, guys are putting tourniquets, and we're calling medevac in for somebody. And he said, he just told me, he goes, the scene at the airport's crazy. These guys are just throwing a fit, right? And people are looking like, who are these guys? And they, and you know, I mean, to me, it makes me smile just thinking of that. And then yeah. He said, so we want you to do your thing. And if you can imagine doing the post-traumatic winning thing in that setting, right? And I will tell you, the average the experience for these guys is the average experience for the average veteran. And that is this. They went to the VA. They went looking for help. And what they found was an organization that's more than willing to medicate them, send them to group, but they didn't have a path for them to lead a greater life. And that's what I do. And if you can imagine all that lumped into, you know, a 3-4 day trip, it's crazy, off the hook, unbelievable. The setting's a part of it, beautiful, peaceful. They go out and they fly fish during the day, and that's what these places are. They're fly fishing places. They come home. The food is off the hook. You will get your inner fat man back on. I mean, because the food is like crazy, the best I've eaten in years up there. And then the conversations that you ultimately have are incredibly moving. Guys who did never associated being able to take their experiences in combat and the other traumatic experiences in their life and look at somebody and say, hey, look, you know I fought in fill in the blank, Afghanistan, Iraq, right? Yes. Can I talk to you about some stuff that I think will help you? One Marine was telling me about, I work with foster kids and I never talked to them about, you know, being wounded. And he has like, you know, Frankenstein leg in terms of, you know, umpteen surgery, skin grafts, the whole nine yards. So it's not like when he throws on a pair of shorts and he helps them at a CrossFit gym, foster kids looking to go into the military. He said, I never associated my pain, my trauma and trauma with what they might have gone through in their life and me using it to show them a path to a greater place. And then I said, but you forgot one step. Them helping others to get there. And he looked at me, got tears in his eyes. He goes, I can't wait to go back home. And so really the beauty, right, this is that they're going to go back home. And this program is now going to spawn efforts all across the country, whether it be, you know, you work with people involved in domestic violence or foster kids. And it's our traumatic wisdom predominantly comes from the enlisted side of the Marine Corps. That is the driver of all this. And so you got to see it, man. You got to see it.
You got me sold. The reason why I've always wanted to go to Montana in the first place is I've got a good buddy who's one of those fly fishing instructors out there. And he sends me pictures on Snapchat and stuff like every day. I'm just like, oh, yeah, here's a herd of buffalo that just kind of scroll, you know, walked up to our camp. You know, here's a grizzly bear that's tearing open our trash right now. It seems like, I don't know, it seems like the version of America that I've always had in my mind. I've
well,
even tried
I'll
to sell my
this.
Life on living there, having never visited. I have been to Alaska.
Well, I'll tell you what,
Alaska.
I'm going to tell you, you'll revisit that conversation because one of the things I talked about in the first hour was after spending a week up there, then you flip back your TV on. That's not – this thing we're watching on TV, in my opinion, it's all financially driven, right? There was a bad cop, right? Is that indicative of all police force across the country? No, okay? And so there's a better life out there, and it exists in small-town America. And that is
– I can't agree more.
That
is
worthy.
If you go outside,
that is worthy of
getting along.
Oh, my God. That is worthy of your life. That is worthy of your life's work and your effort on a daily basis to go help other people, to extend yourself for them. And it's a path to a great life for yourself. So to me – I came home, man. I'm going to find a way to live in Montana part time because I, you know, my experience in North Dakota, you know, showed me what it is to live in small town America. It's the best. It's the best existence in this country, and the urban centers of our nation are fighting this war, you know, and trying to apply these extremely liberal beliefs to, you know. To modern life or to any life, you know, defunding the police and all that, and it will fail, and the pendulum will swing back. But I don't know that that's worthy of your life's work, to sit in there, to watch the news, I don't care what your source is, to see the craziest shit that goes on, to get that put in your face every day, all for financial gain for those corporations, whether it be social media or TV news, and then that consume your thoughts. Click it off. You know, go to... Right, go to Sandbox News, okay, and read it. Read different aspects of the news that are worthy of your time. That stuff will always be there, but that is not the country you live in. I know that. And devote yourself to things that make you happy, that are fulfilling. And I think you're more apt to find that in small town America. So, my ideal life, I think, would be to go up to Montana for 2 weeks every month. And then come back down and live in San Clemente on the hill overlooking the oceans, right? And do All Marine Radio and do post-traumatic winning for both plays. I'd be like a happy person.
Honestly, man, that's not that far. Like my life aspiration is, well, since I became a father, it's shifted slightly. I really would like to leave land in particular, since I don't imagine I'll end up particularly wealthy. I'd love to at least to be able to leave some possessions to my daughter, whether it's a house or a big plot of land or what have you. But other than that, I want to live in the woods and I want to write books that I mail to my publisher. I spend my entire life right now living within the computer, which, God's honest truth, is a winning lottery ticket. It's a blessing that I'm able to do this. I love to write. But like what you're talking about, that the difference between kind of the mass media world and the real world, there's never been a more stark contrast between the mass media world and the world that I think most of us live in. And what you're saying is a perfect example of that. You know, we see on the news this country's tearing itself apart, but I live in a neighborhood that's got lots of different ethnicities in it. I work in a company that's, 40% immigrant and lots of different ethnicities within it. And we aren't tearing each other apart and we aren't tearing ourselves apart. The neighborhood that I live in is not the world that I see on TV. The company that I work for, which – we're spread out all over the country but is based in Washington, D.C., is not the Washington, D.C. that I see on TV. And it's true just as much as it is for me as a guy who works in the media and like my responsibility. I do see – even though Sandbox News is a positive news outlet. You know, I had a meeting last week with the editor-in-chief of The War Horse, who is a very different style of news outlet. They're a nonprofit news outlet, which I think is important, and that's why we were meeting. Find ways that I could signal boost what they were doing.
Right.
And so as we're talking about it, you know, I was like, to be honest, Sandbox News is a positive news outlet. You know, our goal is not to focus on how hot the fire is burning in a few specific places. Our goal is to focus on, you know, the overall force, our posture against potential future threats, and, you know, the real nobility of service right now. And she said something along the lines of, you know, it's important that we shine a light on things that are wrong. I agree. And I don't think that being a positive outlet means you can't talk about things that are going wrong. But I think that it means focusing on legitimate and pragmatic solutions to real problems, not falling victim to the Nirvana fallacy where everything's got to be perfect to be acceptable. But we can engage with issues in a positive way instead of in this negative way that is like, let's just get everybody riled up and upset enough to share this story or to comment underneath it or to click like or an angry face or to post it on Reddit so people can see how dumb this guy is.
Right, so we can be evaluated because, wow, look at the number of hits to the website. Look at the number of followers, because that is the currency of the realm.
It really is. It really is. And this is one thing that I really try to encourage people to do because – to be honest, your and my solution are personal solutions, right? You and I kind of want to get ourselves to a place where we can do what we love, participate in the world at large in a positive way, but not necessarily be a part of that rat race of sensationalism and sales, right?
Right.
So those are personal solutions that
well,
you and I can do.
Well, we're kind of screwed because we believe in the truth.
I know. That's a real problem.
I hate that.
It was my wife's on my wedding anniversary over the weekend.
Wow,
so we spent like Saturday just kind of hanging out and talking. One of the things that we talked about is why I get so frustrated on social media is the Marine in me. You know, I guarantee you, just like me, when you were on active duty and you would walk into the 7-day store or the PX and you'd see some dumb Lance Corporal wearing a plain white t-shirt, you know, or wearing his, you know, green PT gear. When you obviously shouldn't be doing that in the PX. I don't care that this is the 7-day store over near base housing. That's still not appropriate. Right. You know better.
Right.
You have the obligation to go and make that correction. It is built into us as Marines that when we see other Marines that are fucked up, we go and make that correction. We say, hey there, why are you dressed like that? You know better than to do that. A lot of times we may even not do it that rude. We may say, hey, man, you know better than that. Why don't you go change? Sometimes we might be sick of it because it's the third guy today. And we say, hey, devil, what the hell's the matter with you? You know better than that. Go change your clothes. Now, in a post-Marine Corps world for me, I feel very similar obligations on social media. When I see people sharing stories from really, really inappropriate outlets, from outlets without any credibility whatsoever – when I see people sharing stories that are giving you a prepackaged narrative as opposed to equipping you to establish your own, when I see people sharing things that I know hurt our discourse, I feel the same way that I used to when I would see that punk Lance Corporal in green on green at the 7-day store. I feel an obligation to go, this is a part of a problem that you are participating in and you need to fix yourself. Now, do I do that every time? Of course not. You know, that would be more than a full-time job. But it's frustrating to see people do things that we know is wrong. And we do it so often and so readily that it's not any different than going out without a belt on and wearing pants with belt loops.
Okay, so here's a question, though, that begs to be asked, right? How do you wipe your ass if you're policing the internet?
Exactly. And that's really what it comes down to. It's part of my frustration. Because hear me out. I am not suggesting that if you have an opinion that runs opposed to mine, that means that you're wrong and you're sharing the wrong thing.
No, no. Yeah, but you have a moral responsibility to correct people.
Yes. It's the
how did you get yourself to that billet? That's a busy
– Well, you know, I think it's a combination of things. First, it's the Marine in me. And second, right. It's because I work in the media. And more often than not, we tend to blame the media, like as a general term, as though there's like a singular entity that is.
Yeah, we talk about the Taliban like that too.
Yeah, exactly.
The Taliban, it's a loose confederation of dudes pursuing their own financial interests.
Yeah, absolutely. You nailed it. That's a great analogy.
It's not a monolithic event.
And so as that guy, like as the resident guy who works in the media, for a lot of my friends especially, who don't know a lot of people who work in the media because it's a fairly small industry, you know, when they post something where it's like, well, if we just ignored the media for a month, I bet you all the problems in this country would go away. There's some truth to that. But the reason isn't that the media is trying to convince you of problems. The reason is because you guys are so excited by the potential that there could be problems.
Right.
That's what we want to share. That's what we want to click on.
It's
we
like,
want to
it's,
be angry.
It's the rubbernecking event on the freeway, right? The accident is off to the side. The cars are smashed. The people are out there. and you just sat in traffic for 40 minutes and it's because people are slowing down to watch.
To watch it. You're 100% right, you know? And when people say, you see this meme a lot, the why isn't the media covering this? I promise you that the media is. The problem is that no one's sharing it. So you didn't see it in your newsfeed. And if it doesn't show up in your newsfeed, you assume it doesn't exist.
It doesn't.
You know? When people are like, well, why, you know, why aren't more people talking about Epstein? Everybody's talking about Epstein. There's a million stories about Epstein every day. Google it. You know, type it into the search bar. It's just as easy to type that search bar, or type that search query in as it is to post a comment like, well, why aren't we talking more about blank? I promise you, we're talking about it. There might even be a website dedicated just to it. But instead of complaining on social media, maybe you should just put a little bit of legwork in and you'll find it. And then you can share it. And then guess what? 60 people who wouldn't have seen that important story otherwise are going to see it. And of those 60, 10 of them might click like and 3 of them might comment under it going, wow, that's important. And it, because of that engagement, 40 more people will see it. And then 3 of them will comment and then 40 more will see it. That's how a story gets traction. You know, that's how an issue becomes important. Issues become important because we pay for their importance with our attention. And if we're not paying attention to the important stuff, we can't really blame the outlets for giving us what we ask for, you know? So the media is a problem, absolutely. But let's remember that the media is a problem because we're the customer and, we, you know, supply and demand. If we ask for better news, better coverage, better journalism, you won't get it by just saying it out loud. You'll get it by voting with your attention. Google the good stuff. Share the good stuff. Comment on the good stuff. No, but to our previous point, if the world doesn't get too keen on doing that, then I'm still happy to just buy a mountain and a lot of fence line and move into that.
Well, and again, it's an interesting conversation with people about life and about happiness. And I had that a number of times, you know, what are you doing that, you know, what are you doing to promote your own happiness financially? And so, cause in, you know, in post-traumatic winning, you know, I talk about, you know, the second goal of post-traumatic winning. The first one is you got to learn to coexist. The second goal is you got to live with self-discipline if you've been through traumatic shit. If you don't, relative to physical fitness, relative to money, relative to alcohol and drugs, and then also relative to learning wellness techniques that you practice in terms of things like meditation, things like having grown-up conversations with doctors about medications they want to put you on, or about
with, that's actually really, really important.
With or with therapists about what's to do out of all this, okay? Because if you don't impact my life, I can do this with somebody else. And then having a mature understanding of your responsibility relative to those things, and saying, okay, so what's at the end of the day, you know, what's the aim? It's for you to be happy, right? So if it doesn't contribute to your happiness, then what the fuck are you doing?
Man, what a good insight.
I see it so much, right? So sit down and do a little monthly counseling for yourself, you know, and just write down every month, you know, look at a list of these are the things that are most important to me, right? Are you servicing those targets every month? And if you're not, then what the fuck are you doing? Right?
Anybody out there who spends much time like around a conference table or in Zoom meetings worrying about things like growth for your company or worrying about things like budget, a lot of people are probably familiar with OKRs, which are operational key results. I don't remember which company came up with the idea, but they've been adopted pretty widely. And it's exactly that. We don't think that it's weird in a work environment to go, these are our 3 overarching goals for the year. Our goals are increase revenue. Our goals are increase our customer base. Our goals are, you know, drive traffic to this web platform. When you have goals like that at work, and then you're able, those OKRs have got a number of key results underneath, but effectively the point of having them is so that you can say, okay, does this project that I'm working on right now, does it get me any closer to accomplishing one of those 3 OKRs? And if it doesn't, I don't need to be doing this project. I need to disregard or at least deprioritize this project, because ultimately our three goals are to increase revenue, you know, increase our footprint and drive traffic. So if those are my goals and I'm working on something that doesn't inform those goals, that's a poor use of my time. That's right. Bad prioritization. So have OKRs in your real life, just like Mac is saying. If your goal – and I'm very open about the fact that I go to therapy and that I'm medicated, because I think it's important that veterans that are otherwise – I mean, if you could call me a normal guy.
We can't.
But if you think that I at least seem somewhat reasonable and not crazy, it's important that you know that I'm a guy who goes to therapy and I take medication and I've changed meds over the years and I didn't do therapy for a long time. It's fairly recent for me. Right. And the reason is exactly what Mac's talking about, is that I've got those OKRs. My OKRs are to be a good dad, to do better by me, and to be a good husband. You know, those are my three OKRs. And if you're taking a medication that doesn't inform one of those OKRs, you're taking a medication because somebody thinks you should. I'm not against medication. I take medication. But you need to be proactive about it. It's tough to go ask for help. But that's not when you're done. You're done when 4 to 6 weeks later, if you feel as though the medication has got a good or a bad effect on you, you go back to the doctor and you talk to them again. And maybe
but
they change the dosage
what,
or the medication.
And you know us. That's not what we do. What we do is we throw it away, right?
Yep.
And we go back to faking it. And so, I, you know.
And I've done that
half a dozen
times.
You're dope, okay? So what? Yeah. So when I talk about this in post-traumatic winning, I say, okay, look. We are the worst patients in the world, and everybody laughs, right? We know this, right? We
it's
lie to
totally
our doctors.
True.
We lie to mental health people just so we don't have to go, okay?
Says the guy who just before this show, I walked to the bathroom without my crutches on my broken leg because I'm sick of my crutches.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
And so I said, so when you think of what you should do, okay, I want you to think about this. Women – because their bodies are more complex, grow up going to the doctors, and they tend to be more mature about, you know, their health. So when you contemplate a decision like this, I want you to think of this. What would a woman do, right? What would a woman do? So if you don't if you don't like the zombie feeling that these medications are putting on, right?
Then you're on the wrong meds, man.
Well,
instead of
throwing them away, instead of giving them to somebody else that's taking them to abuse them, take the bag, make an appointment, right? And do what a woman would do, which is go back to the doctor and say, "Doc, you can have these back. Can you help me?
Yeah.
Can you help me find either different meds that don't have these side effects, maybe something homeopathic or natural? Could you work with me, you know, to mitigate these feelings?" And guess what they'll do? They'll help you, but they can't help you if you don't let them in there and you don't talk about it. And there's, I have a great piece of audio of a friend of mine who lost two brothers to accidents here in the United States after both had been had both combat deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan. He in the Army, third ACR guy, and he says this. He says, when you're not lying to the doctor about how much you drink, and then he talked about how his life changed. Yeah, I drank 3 or 4 cases of beer a week. And he said, and then you actually start listening and doing what they tell you to do, you know, it changed my life. But they can't help you if you won't have a conversation, you know, about it with them. And so and so, you know, when we talk about this, we've got to take better care of ourselves. And if you want to think you can continue to defy the laws of nature, you know, you're wrong. And that's what post-traumatic winning is. I say, look, these things that I'm going to tell you, and I play this audio from this guy from Alabama. His name's Jack Riley. And he was a squad leader in Vietnam. And he came home and he organized the first reunions they had. And the way he did it was he bought DOS floppy disks that have phone books of the United States on them. And he searched for his guys. And they put together the first reunions that they had post-Vietnam. And since then, he's continued to be their squad leader for what are we at, 50 years post-Vietnam now?
Yeah.
And he's got two calls from the VA. One to tell him that he served for a year in something called Agent Orange. And the second call from the VA was to tell him that, yeah, Camp Lejeune has a whole bunch of shit in its water and you're on that database. And yet the only thing Jack's ever done is serve his Marines. And so to me, he's just this great example. Now he holds their hand as they die, as Agent Orange eats their lungs from the outside in, which the VA say it's not necessarily Agent Orange related. So there's a cherry on top of the whole of the whole of the whole of the whole. And so when you listen to this traumatic wisdom about alcohol, about medications, about therapy, it is the traumatic wisdom of the enlisted Marine Corps that goes on for decades. And it tells you, if you listen to it, that if you go see a therapist and you don't do with somebody else what you're doing with the therapist, what you're ultimately doing is counterproductive. Because I don't know anybody who has an enduring relationship with a therapist. Nobody. The way we move, we come and we go, different insurance companies cover different things, blah, 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 blah. I don't know anybody. So if you're not doing the exact, if you're not replicating what you're doing in therapy with your spouse, with one of your good friends, you're doing it wrong.
Well, especially if you, because this is something that I think is dangerous. It's a dangerous thing to get into as a vet who goes to therapy, is this idea that you go to therapy and it's going to fix you, right? And what you're talking about here is an important part of it, is that therapy is like going to the gym, right? You don't go to the gym once and get the result that you were after. It's going to take a long time of going to the gym. And when you move, you'll probably end up going to a different gym. And as the years go by, your goals in the gym may shift. Maybe you were a bodybuilder when you were 25, but now you're 36 and you're kind of thinking about getting into running marathons. Your goals are going to change. Where you are is going to change. The things that matter to you and even the things that are kind of dragging you down are going to change. Even if they're tied to your time in service and it's been years since, your vantage point on your problems is going to shift over the years. You can't expect the therapist to cure your problems. The therapist is like a personal trainer. They're there to say, yeah, you need to do this many curls. Yeah, you probably ought to get on the squat rack right now. Here are some good ideas for your diet plan. But it's you who has to do the work. And eventually the time is going to come where maybe you no longer feel the need to go to therapy. Maybe you want to make a change. Maybe you moved to a new city. You're not going to have the same trainer with you. But you have to maintain elements of that same regimen. You've got to take it with you to your next gym. Maybe you're not going to work with a trainer anymore. Maybe the days of working with a trainer or a therapist are behind you because you reached some goals or you just kind of outgrew it.
Well, I would tell you this. Maybe, because let me just tell you, I there's no way around the fact that you have to talk about it. And if you think, this is, I can hear
Jeremiah. It's all about learning the skills.
I can hear Jeremiah Workman, saying, don't let the monkeys out of the cage. Well, that's Vietnam era mental health advice.
It really is. And honestly, it's alive and well today. I have a good friend, one of my best buddies from the Marine Corps, that is very much his position on it today as an Iraq war vet.
Right. Yeah. Put it in the fuck you box, stick it in the closet, and don't go near it. And that's the way you deal with it. And so then when I walk in and say, do you know that that could be a source of ultimately of joy in your life? They look at me like, okay, the dude's fucking old and he's crazy. And then you show them. Do you realize that your traumatic experiences might be able to help victims of domestic violence? That I fought in Iraq or Afghanistan, and I just want to share with you the things that we've learned from our experience. That one, you're not going to get over it. Okay, the most fundamental facts. You will never get over it. You'll live with it. And we can show you a path where not only that you can live a good life, you can live a great life. Now, that path gets walked by people post-trauma. This is not a military thing. Elizabeth Smart has walked it. Matt Kiker has walked it. Right? All these different people.
The military does not have a monopoly on trauma.
No.
That is
but
for sure.
If I can show you that those horrible experiences that you experienced, right, in fill in the blank, if that could be the trampoline to taking your life to a different place, a place you don't even know that exists. It's like a beautiful mountaintop in Montana. But it's better because all your friends, your family, and the people who you impact are all up there with you. It's like the coolest party in the world. If I could show you that, would you do it? And the answer is always, yes, absolutely I would. And then they do it, and then they're like, holy shit. But the key is these universal right? The traumatic wisdom of the of Marines, not the Marine Corps, because the Marine Corps is a different entity, of Marines. And you've got to talk about it. And going to see a therapist, absolutely. But there's no reason why you should shouldn't have the majority of that conversation with your spouse or a good friend who will not judge you. And then someday if you decide, you know what, I'm okay not seeing the therapist, you still have an outlet for it.
Because in my opinion, that's the goal.
Right.
And I mean, talk about it. No offense to the people who feel as though they want to go to therapy forever.
That's fine.
But for me, my goal, like I approach this very much the same way I did a fight back in my mixed martial arts days. Okay, so I go, all right, my fight's on January 16th. I've got 7 months. I need to be this weight by this time. I need to be at this position by this time. I need to be able to do this by this time. Even though I don't have a deadline here, I have the same approach to it. My goal is to – and you know, this is another part about to Max's point earlier. If that therapist isn't working for you, it's – this is their job. They're not going to take it personal. You're not breaking up with a girlfriend or a boyfriend by changing therapists. Because for me, I'm not particularly into – I don't want to spend a long time talking about my dad and finding ways I could blame my problems on him. For a lot of therapists, for a lot of people, they find that useful and actionable and more power to you. That's not what I want. I go to my therapist for assignments. I go, these are the things I'm working on. These are the ways I'm worried that they could affect the way that I'm a dad. And then my therapist goes, okay, from now on, I want you to start doing this on Wednesdays. I want you to do this once a week. I want you. And to be honest, it took me a bit to find a therapist that would work with me this way, but that's how I work. I'm objective. No,
but again, that should be – so wait a minute. So I need a therapist and I'm going to be randomly assigned to somebody and
yes,
that's how this is going to fucking work? It's stupid. Think about it. You got to interview
really
them.
Is.
You walk in and I do this thing like if I was your therapist, right, Alex? So you come in and I come walking out. I'm like, hey, I'm Mac. You're like, hey, I'm Alex. Well, come on back. Do you want coffee, tea, pop, anything? Because that's the kind of guy that I am, right? And you say, yeah, I'll take some water. So I throw you a bottle of water. We walk into my office. It's got all my I Love Me shit on it, right? I have cool I Love Me shit. And you're like, whoa.
For anybody who may not be familiar, your I Love Me shit, if you weren't in the Marine Corps, is either a binder or a wall or something like that. But it's a bunch of awards,
pictures, plaques, all this shit we get, right? So,
yeah.
So you see that and you're like, wow, that's cool. Like, I have some of that shit. And then you sit down and I look at you and say, all right, man, what's your major fucking malfunction? Now, what do you say? Like, the dude hablas, man. He speaks my language. I'm home. And so, right, we go through this thing, and I listen to you, and I'm pretty kind of looking to see if you have infrastructure damage that is beyond what I can help. I mean, I can't help with that. I mean,
yeah,
other people do, right?
Some things, if it's a wiring issue, don't be afraid to address it as such.
That's got to be addressed before we can go to something. The reasoning issue – you know, and the thinking issues comes after the wiring issue. So anyway, so I say like, no, he's part of the 95% of us that are just scuffling through life and is struggling. Okay, so then I stop you and I say, okay, Alex, you and I are going to be friends for 6 weeks. I'm going to teach you everything I know, okay, in 6 weeks. Now, you can keep coming back if you want to. I'm cool with that. But then after 6 weeks, you're going to help me save other people. That's the deal, okay? And what would you say?
Yeah,
fuck,
man.
Fuck,
you know?
Yes. And so then I'd say, okay, next week when you come back, I want you to, before you come back, read this article, right? And then the first 40 minutes you're here, the first 30 minutes you're here, I'm going to listen to your shitty life because that's what I do. The next 10, we're going to talk about that article, right? And then after that, we're just going to have a little discussion about this thing. And you're like, all right. And then I say, okay, stand up. And then I headbutt your ass, right? Poosh! And now you're bleeding, and you're like, "What the fuck?" Right? So what do? You like grab me by the shirt, you headbutt me back. Now I'm bleeding. Like, and we're like, "Therapy, man, this is fucking awesome," right? And whenever I tell the story, Marines are like, they're laughing, like, "This is so fucking stupid." But I say, "Would you go see that guy?" And they're like, "Fuck yeah." I mean, I'd probably put a little foam rubber on my forehead next time, but I would come back. Fuck yeah, I would.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because literally just this last week I was talking to my therapist and she said, well, one of the problems that you're kind of having difficulty with that I don't think you've engaged with is that your entire life, you've always had a really healthy outlet for anger. I was a football player my entire childhood. I played rugby in college, football in the Marines. I fought for a long time. And she's like, and what do you do now when you're angry? And I was like, well, you know, I don't get angry all that much. She said, well, what would you do if you were furious in the living room with your wife and your daughter? And I said, well, I'd probably go downstairs to the basement. She's like, exactly. If you can't punch it in the face, you're not really sure what to do with angry. That's something that you need to think about. That's my homework assignment for this week, is to think about what would I do with anger in now, current contemporary crippled Alex that, you know, I'm walking everywhere on crutches and I can't even go lift like I normally would. What is it that I'm going to do with my anger? It's a question that I hadn't really thought to ask myself, and that's what I wanted. That's the kind of treatment that I need, is someone who makes me ask myself.
That's the kind of person who you need
questions.
To talk to, right? And so that's going to happen randomly. And so, I mean, that's a big part of it, is that we don't know how. In fact, I had a Marine. We don't know how to do this. We don't know how to interview them. We don't know how to fire them if they're not good. That's your right, man. You deserve
that's
that.
That's your job.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So I had a Marine come up to me and say, you know, I've thought about some of the things you talk about. He said, obviously, like, not like you have, but he said, I don't know what to say. I don't know how to start the conversation. And I said, well, I think you know where it goes, right? And he said, yeah. And I said, you know, post-traumatic winning has evolved to 3 goals, 10 commandments, 2 questions. These are the 2 questions. And know this, when I started all this, I didn't know a lot of things I've learned. And one of the things I've learned is, you know,
that's great, man. That's because your solutions are research-based.
No,
you know?
they're enlisted-based.
Yeah, they're experiential.
They're enlisted, like, research-based. But here's – so I didn't know what a serious mental illness was. Okay? So look up what serious mental illness is. Look at what percentage of the population has one. And that is the infrastructure damage that we're talking about. Well, guess what? What's driving the suicide numbers and all the destructive behavior, alcoholism, divorce, is not the people that have serious mental illnesses. It's the people that don't have them that are applying a permanent solution to a temporary situation because they only see blackness and they are overwhelmed. And so when you look at them and say, if you'll ask 2 questions, right? And normally it's not too hard when people have infrastructure damage. It's most of the time it's pretty obvious. If you look at the people that aren't and you just ask 2 questions, 1, hey, could I talk to you? And then the second one after they say yes is, you know that there's nothing wrong with you, right? That what you're going through is absolutely normal for what you've been through. You know that, right? And they don't know that. And they'll look at
you. I was going to say, they don't.
They don't.
And they don't know that.
And they'll look at you, right? And they'll say, are you a therapist? And you say, no, I used to be an enlisted Marine. We have PhDs in this shit. Okay, and so then I said, just pull out these 3 goals and 10 commandments. And when you're in that black place and somebody shows you that, you're never going to get over it. Trauma is trauma is trauma. Whether you were raped like Elizabeth Smart, whether you're a victim of domestic violence, or you slugged it out in the streets of Fallujah, that is the same. There is no brownie points for nation of origin relative to trauma. Right? That it's okay to feel damaged, that you've got to talk about your shit, that if trauma impacts your life in a big way, you have to stop drinking. And I know Alex will recoil, and then I can hear Alex talking to me. And so I say this, and I know that a lot of you out there just said, hey, fuck you, man, I'm not going to stop drinking. And I got it, okay? The Marine Corps was founded in a bar, for God's sakes. So it's part of our culture. But I'm going to tell you this. When you come to a crossroads of your life and you're about to go down the darker path, choose to live a great life. And so I accept that you reject it today and, like, never me, but it might be you. And if it does apply to you, because the way the monkeys come out of the cage is with alcohol and drugs. And then they come and they shit stomp the people you love most, your spouse, your friends, and your family, till they don't want to be around you anymore. And that is a path that has been walked by us as a culture and by people with trauma that is about 900 lanes wide, that is well lit, well striped, and well paved. That is one of our huge highways to do this. And when you look at them and begin to have that conversation, you're going to change their life. because it's the truth. And when you do that, that's how that hole, that black hole that's filled with trauma, becomes a trampoline, you know, the trampoline of transformation. And you change their life, and then who else gets their life changed? You do. I'll tell you another funny story. This is my enlisted roots, right? So as I'm first doing this, the first week we're doing it at Camp Lejeune, and you know the guy from Boulder Crest, Josh, was helping me, and he looks at me during the break. He goes, "Wow, Mac," he said, "Viktor Frankl's all through your shit," and I said, "Who's Viktor Frankl?"
And he's I've read one of his books.
Right. I didn't know who he was. I had never read any of his shit. And he looks at me. He goes, "His stuff is all in your shit, like Viktor Frankl." I'm like, "Oh, what am I, stupid now, Josh? I don't know who Viktor Frankl is. What is he? Is he a hockey player? Does he play for the Red Wings? They got a bunch of Russians." He said, "No." I said, "Don't say it like that, because it's kind of like pregnant with I'm stupid, right?" And we don't want to go there. And he said, "You don't know who Viktor Frankl is." I said, "You're dancing near the right on the edge, motherfucker." And he said, "So where did all this come from?" And this is awesome. And this is one of the things I love about post-traumatic winning. I said, "What?" He said, "The giving piece. Where did the giving piece in all this come from?" I said, "It came from Libby Weichel, Luke Weichel's mom, Luke's a Lance Corporal in Fallujah. Libby taught me that." He said, "And you don't know who Frankl is?" I said, "No." Does that make me really smart? Because I like came to the same conclusion. And he said, "I don't really want to go there." I said, "But Libby taught me that. That it wasn't enough that I understood this stuff. When I give it," and that's to me post-traumatic growth, is that something happens to me and I grow because of it. Post-traumatic winning is beyond post-traumatic growth. Because of the way we as Marines would look at it. Well, fucking hooray for you. You fucking grew. How does that help us as a team? Like, what did you, like, you benefited, you grew, and then pulled the rope up behind you? Post-traumatic winning says you've got to give that to other people. And so not only will you grow, you will transform your life as you transform other people's lives.
And I mean, in a very real way, especially if it's something that you're working on, right? So let's say you're a guy going through post-traumatic winning. You just got to have an awesome conversation with Mac 3 weeks ago because you attended a place where he spoke. Now, you know, you've got your paperwork, you're trying to incorporate it into your life, and then your buddy goes, "Hey, what's that?" You don't have to be a master. You don't have to have already completed the full curriculum and have your black belt in post-traumatic winning for sharing it to help you.
It ain't PhD stuff to listen to people
exactly.
That are hurrying and tell them fundamental truths that people, for whatever reason, don't tell us. But we know them, and when you hear them – you know, I have this quote that I attribute.
You go,
"Oh my God,
hey."
I have this quote that I attribute to Kanye West, and then I tell him, "Yeah, he didn't really say that. I said that, but I put his name on it so you all would think it was cool." But it could be like a Kanye West lyric, right? And the quote is this: "The truth lands with a thud and needs no salesman." How fucking way cool is that, Alex?
That's pretty solid. That's solid. Although right. I think that sounds more like Mac than Kanye West.
Okay. Well, I mean, maybe I'll put Macklemore's name on it. And then I say, I talk.
I'm going to call you that, Macklemore.
I put that quote up and I said, if Kanye West says it, what do we know about it? And then half the Marines say it's legit and the other half say it's bullshit. I said, but he didn't really say that. I said that, put his name on it so you all would think it was cool. And they start laughing like, that's so fucked up, right? But that's the enlisted Marine coming out of me, like doing stupid fucking shit. And then I say this, you want to know when that quote popped into my head? I'm listening to Jack Riley, squad leader, India 3-9, talk about his experience in Vietnam. And then his experience coming home from Vietnam. And I'm listening to this guy talk about, you know, combat, like covered in blood multiple times, not his own either, right? And I'm listening to Jack talk about, you know, organizing reunions, being told he's lived in Agent Orange. And then, you know, and he's got the Camp Lejeune water thing in him. And all he does is give. And I said, you know, and I'm listening to that guy talk about his life. And it's powerful, ordinary stuff. And this stuff isn't complicated. And now, you know, I get emails. I got one from a corporal a couple months ago where he talked about he's home for Christmas, just minding his own business. And, you know, he's at a bar with some high school friends. and a girl who was raped in high school is talking about how she's really frustrated because, you know, she doesn't think she's made very much progress, and you know, she hasn't been able to get over it very well. And he said, "I could hear you yelling at my ass, you know." And my brain's like saying, "You need to say something." And he said, "So whenever his attention kind of turned away, you know, she and I were kind of sitting there, and I looked at her and I said, could I talk to you?" And he said, "I'm not going to lie, I was scared to do it." And she said, "Yeah." And he said, then I just looked at her and said, "You know there's nothing wrong with you, right?" And he said, with that, she starts crying. And he looked at her and said, "There's nothing wrong with you. You're never going to get over that experience, right? And I want to show you some stuff that will show you a path to a great place." And then he forwarded me the text message she sent to him. And it's just this beautiful text message. "How do I ever thank you for what you've done for me?" Now, that is not PhD shit, okay? That is enlisted Marine fucking wisdom from Vietnam, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, long before there was any mental health programs. That was us helping us. And it's the most beautiful fucking thing in the world when you can use your trauma to stick your hand out and say, "Look, I let me just tell you the truth about these things that I've learned. And with them, you can transform your life. And that will be a trampoline to vault you there." And they just look at you. And then this happened to me over the weekend. I talked about it in the first hour. Marine gets emotional, right? Fought in Fallujah, Lance Corporal. And, you know, he talked about reviving his son twice, who's overdosed. Jesus. And he said, I'm going to share, you know, with this stuff with my son. And hopefully he'll join me in changing the lives of other kids that are going through what he's going through. And then he stops, right? He gets emotional. And he said, because I don't want my son to die. And then he was texting me yesterday. We're going to have lunch on Wednesday. And you're showing people a path to a greater place, to a place of transformation, and just by virtue of listening and then telling them the truth. And I'm telling you, man, it's the most addictive thing I've ever done in my life. The power of it, when these guys figure out, as young enlisted Marines, the stuff they saw can ultimately be a force of good in their lives as they use it as the basis of conversations and their credibility as quote-unquote combat Marines, you know, to change other people's lives, man. It is it's incredible. But it's all these truths in there, Alex, that come from your side of the Marine Corps.
I mean, honestly, the way that I look at all of this, and I think that the same way that you look at all of this, is that, I mean, it's a full-time job. There's no getting around that trying to get better is a full-time job when you're in a bad place. But that's what Marines do. This is all what Marines do. If we weren't talking about mental health, if we were talking about, you know, burning the crap out of our neck with brass, you know what I mean? So the gunny who's been on this range 300 times before you says, "Hey, man, pop your collar. So you're not going to scoop that hot brass up and hold it against your neck." It's the exact same approach as when you've got that guy with you on your squad that runs like an idiot and you say, "Hey, man, work on your gait and your run times are going to improve." It's the exact same thing. You know, we're eager to do it when it's finding ways to increase your pull-ups.
Well, and you know, and Alex, and again, more Marine culture attitude. So I go through this shit. I'm struggling. Right. And normally you go through whatever you go through. Some of it might be from your childhood. You know, there's a study that says people who join the all-volunteer force are more than 50% more likely to have traumatic experiences in their youth than people who don't.
I think that makes good sense.
It does, right? So you're looking to escape. You know, maybe it's financial in part. Maybe it's emotional in part from abusive situations. And, you know, you can do it in the military. You know, so, I mean, we come in. I didn't know that. Would it have changed where I led? Had I known that? Probably. And so we have this incredible opportunity. This incredible opportunity to impact the nation, our culture, the traumatic wisdom that comes from our culture. Because as I tell you, this is not a military thing. It's not a military thing. This is a trauma thing, and the credibility we have as Marines and as combat Marines can change people's lives. And making that connection, right, is getting the light to go on, and they look at you and say, "I don't talk about my stuff because, you know, I don't want people to pry and I don't see any good that comes out of it. But you've changed the way I look at that experience. And I've been sitting here all afternoon after your class thinking that, holy shit, man, what happens if that experience could contribute to my life in a positive way? I said, if? Did you not pay attention? And they start laughing, right? I said, there's no if, man. You saw this shit in my life. I'm not supposed to be. I'm supposed to be a medicated guy going to group therapy and talk therapy and enduring this. And this is the cultural thing that I said all that to say this, okay? In that when we get taught that we're going to put you on these medications, you're going to come talk about it, right? That is endurance. And that's what got offered to me. And my attitude as a Marine about endurance was what? Fuck that. Right? So I was going to live this life on this level. And now because of this shit, I'm going to live a lesser life? Yeah. Fuck that. As Marines, we've never accepted that. Right? When we bump into something, what do? Right? We grab it by the throat. We thrash the shit out of it. Then we beat the shit out of it. And then we stick it in our pocket. And that shit belongs to us. That's our culture, man. And that's the people that gravitate to our culture. And that's why the Marine Corps is the toughest combat organization in the world. The whole corporation from top to bottom is filled with people like that. All you have to do to get them to do something, right, is either call them a pussy or tell them they can't do it. I did a backflip.
That's how I ended up in the Marine Corps in the first place.
I did a backflip into a 41-degree reservoir last week because they called me a pussy. And I'm like, my whole life I've been doing this. Like, what is wrong with me? But that's who gravitates when people say, "Yo, you can't do that." Oh, really?
I walked into the recruiting office. There was an Army recruiter there, a Marine recruiter there. The Army recruiter offered a $40,000 signing bonus. And I said to the Marine, I won't say his name just in case he doesn't want his name out there. But I was like, hey, Gunny, you know, what will the Marine Corps give me? And he was like, nothing. We don't need you. And I was like, you know, I'm sold. You got me. I'll join the Marines then. Because I was so dead set on proving to him that the Marine Corps did need me. And that's how you end up at Paris
Islander.
And that's just
in your DNA. And so when somebody sells us this endurance thing, and Marines – and the sad part is Marines are doing what they got told to do, which is go to the VA, right? Right, you read. There's an article in Military Times in February based on a study. I think that was done out of Harvard or the University of Chicago or something like that. That the two major protocols that are used by both the DoD and the VA do not help improve between 50 to 66% of PTSD patients.
100% true, man. Anybody who sells you on the idea that you're going to do better because of a bottle of pills is lying to you. And that's coming from a guy who's been medicated for a long time. Medication is the tiniest bit of this. It is the tiniest bit of it. You know, just like you can't get a pill that's going to make
you
skinny.
But we tell them that's what you should do, and they do. And then what happens is, you know, they get
when
given –
when things don't get better, you get disheartened.
Right, and then you throw the drugs away, and you're groping in the dark. Now add alcohol, broken relationship, struggling financially.
And you end up dismissive of the entire idea of working on it. Because I tried that once, and look what it got me.
Right. And is anybody surprised when somebody would take their own life? When you know, it's in that black place. But the cool part of this is, you know, we can change that. And because I'll tell you what, in my experience, when you tell Marines the truth and you challenge them, okay, I didn't come in here to make you better. Okay, I came in here to tell you the fucking truth, whether you like it or not. And if you'll embrace it, and then you'll turn around and help other people, watch what happens to your life. I came here to help you so that you can help other people. And you have a moral responsibility for every person whose lives you touch. You have to get them to help other people. And if we do that, we can change our institution. We can help our families. We can help our communities. Every high school and university in this country we can help. Us, Marines. Our culture. This shit comes out of our culture. There was a kid who was there last week. I won't say his name. He's a triple amputee. And at the end of it, you know, we were talking as a group. And he said, you know, I get invited to go to all kinds of stuff like this because of my injuries. And he's a great guy. And he said, I've never been to anything like this. First of all, to be here with you, the guys who saved his life. in Sangin in 2010 is the most wonderful experience. And I was sitting over his right – I was standing over his right shoulder as he sat around this fire. And he turned in his chair and looked at me and he said, and Mac, he said, the things that you've taught us here, he said, were have been amazing. And he said, I'm going to tell you that this is a special group of human beings and we will go back and we will change people's lives. He said, but I just want everybody to know, I've been to a lot of programs. I've never been to anything like this. And again, what makes my heart swell is it comes from the traumatic wisdom of Marines, predominantly enlisted Marines. It is straight look in your face, straight tell you the truth, and then challenge you to be better. And guess what? Marines respond to that. They don't want to be hugged and mollycoddled and go, oh, baby, it's going to be better. Come on, poopsie. That's they don't respond to that. But I've never had anybody that I look at and say, I'm going to teach you some stuff, and what I want you to do is to help me, right, save other people too. Will you help? I've never had a Marine say no. If you just talk to them about the merits of anything to helping themselves, you'll get the, okay, man, I'll check it out. But if you ask them to help, will you help? Will you learn this to help save other people? And they believe you're credible because you're prior enlisted like me, then then it's magical, man. It's magical. So anyway, I don't know how we – that's a long time to be talking about that stuff. So anyway.
But I would argue probably one of the most important things that we could spend time talking about. You
it
know?
Is. Hey, let me tell you. And I told these guys – so I had the discussion with this board, right? They were like – so now this past week, you know, now that they saw it, I look at them like, because I'm a grown-up, told you, right? And I said, are you watching this shit? And they're like, wow. It's, you know, it's one thing to hear about it. I said, it's another thing to see this shit. You're transforming their lives. And now they're going to go back and transform other people's lives, right? So I'm going to tell you, you better get ready to grow this son of a bitch, because there's going to be people with money that want to be part of something that actually fucking works and then gives back. I said, that's what's going to happen here. And they're like, this has been unbelievable. Unbelievable. And so to me, it's cool on top of cool on top of cool on top of cool that the traumatic wisdom of the enlisted side of the Marine Corps can, in my opinion, transform every high school, college, and university, you know, and we can go back home as enabled veterans, not disabled veterans. That experience made me a better human being, right? It enabled me to come back and help other people. And I'm ready. And anybody, and I'm now I drive around my car looking for fucked up people. Who is that? Oh, that's Hollings, like staggering by the side of the road. Hey, what's wrong? Are you okay? Yeah, I just got a broken leg. Like, get in my car. You don't look okay. I want to talk to you. Right? I'm going out there, like, looking for people because of the high you get. And I tell people, that's the drug you need. Start changing people's lives. You want to get on a good drug that's free and there's an endless supply of? Because there's so many people that are struggling, whether it be with child abuse, whether it be with, you know, domestic violence, whether it be, you know, through violent crime or just all the things that fuck us up in life. And look, man, you can do it. Do it. And so it's, yeah. So.
In the words of the immortal Shia LaBeouf, just do it.
Just right. Do it. Is that where that came from? I thought that was a Nike thing.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, maybe Nike might have had it first. But Shia LaBeouf, from what I understand, is who popularized it.
All right, what are you writing about? What's going on? Let me tell you, I am in the post-traumatic winning Montana Bar X project, cool shit, euphoria of my life, right? And it even was made better because yesterday when I was flying back, I actually watched a baseball game that was on TV. There was something to escape into other than the news and, you know, statues being yanked down and another version of Karen, like in a Home Depot someplace, losing their shit over wearing masks or some other bit of craziness. That I was rescued from that by a baseball game, Yankees and Mets. I was like so happy.
You know, the world, I mean, at least for me, the world needs to be pretty bad for baseball to be a worthwhile alternative. It's the most boring sport in the world.
I think we're approaching that, though.
Yeah, I agree. Well, definitely check out Sandbox News this week at sandboxwith2xsnews.com. We've got all kinds of great stuff going up. I'm actually editing an article right now by Amy Dickey, she's a Marine spouse. She's married to a Marine gunny. She's also a mental health professional. This article is all about just how well military children have adapted to what a crazy year 2020 is. It's also got some great resources in there for if you're having trouble helping your kid adapt to what a crazy year 2020 is, especially as we're looking forward to potentially, you know, homeschooling our kids, you know, while working from home and everything else just to make things that much easier for us. I highly recommend it. We just published that. But we've got a lot of other great content going up. I've also got a piece in this month's issue of Popular Mechanics about the B-52. If you're into old airplanes, please make sure you pick up a copy. I've also got an article on the Spitfire that'll be in popularmechanics.com later this week, and all kinds of other crazy stuff. You can find me on social media at facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter. You can find me on Twitter at AlexHollings52. Twitter is usually the best place to yell at me. If you're mad about something I wrote, I engage more rapidly on Twitter than most other platforms. And again, sandboxnews.com with two X's. Swing by and see what we've got.
Email. First of all, Mac, where do I get that drug that you're on? Holy shit. honestly, don't be afraid of the truth and don't be ask those two questions. Hey, could I talk to you? You know there's nothing wrong with you, right? And that will open up a conversation with somebody who's in a dark place, and then you could take the drug that I take all the time. And there's no secret to it. It's listening and then a little bit of education, but it's not much because most of this shit's common sense. But, you know, the affirmation people get, I think the confidence they get by hearing me speak, by seeing these truths kind of on one sheet of paper and going, yep, yep, that's no bullshit. Yep, 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 yep. Oh, I'd like to keep drinking, but that's true as fuck. And that just have a conversation about that stuff. That's how you access that drug. That is the pusher for that drug. And you can it's delivered 24/7, that is the nature. And again, I tell everybody, this is not in any way, shape, or form what I expected to be doing at the age of 62. I didn't expect to be doing the most fulfilling things I've ever done in my life. I thought that, you know, starting Allmarine Radio and talking about post-combat related mental health, I hopefully would, you know, would raise awareness and make people smarter and then hopefully put some downward pressure. I did not think I'd come to the conclusion that we could crush that motherfucker, not only within our own culture, but in our general population that suffers from, you know, being sodomized as children by step-parents, right? By being raped, you know, by family members, by domestic violence, by all these fucking things. We can help with that. And I never thought that would happen to me. So, nah, man, you can tell. I mean, it's cool. And now these BarX guys are successful business guys, and we're gonna do. That's gonna be a line of work for, you know, in the future for post-traumatic winning. But again, that's just one line. Think about that. A line that goes to high schools, a line that goes to colleges, you know, a line that speaks and trains first responders to go do this thing. And it is the traumatic wisdom of the enlisted side of the Marine Corps that I love so much because they're funny as fuck. They do. Let me tell you, we go to the Custer Battlefield last week. So I'm with Bravo Company First Recon guys who fought in Sangin in 2010, and they did some serious shit up there. Anyway, so we give the class, and then they're like, well, we want to go to the Custer Battlefield. So we go up there. Well, the woman who's a chef packs these lunches, phenomenal, and we go to the battlefield. So we're walking around the battlefield, then we're going to stop, sit down under a tree, and now it's like, well, I don't know, a dozen of us there, 13 of us. And, you know, we pull the bags of lunch out, we walk over, and everybody pulls out a Tupperware box out of the bag, and we sit down. What happens next? Food starts flying all over the place as people say, hey, who wants these potato chips? Anybody want half my wrap? It was just like MREs. Instead of being ham slices and cheese spread and crackers, and it's like you're sitting there laughing because you've done this a million times in the field, right? and you're watching this beautiful culture that are the toughest, most selfless people you've ever seen in your life. And hopefully my contribution is, right, lifting up a torch to a path that guys who are in the Hanoi Hilton walked, that we can walk, and we can make a contribution to our culture and our society. And in that way, right, we validate our own experiences and live great lives. And that's what, I mean, to me, this is all about. So that's how you get that drug, man. So fucking do it. Enlisted
I love it, man.
Enlisted Marines, man. You know what? I should have been one. I had no business really being an officer.
I will say you're a lot more approachable. That's not true. I know tons of awesome guys who were or are currently officers, and I try my best not to hold it against any of them.
Let me tell you, this is the kind of shit my Marines would do to me, and this is why they asked me if I was prior enlisted. So you're on the ramp, a maintenance ramp. Now, maintenance ramps are no saluting areas. There's some people, you know, some places where you're working, and whenever somebody walks by, you can't stop what you're doing and salute. So there are no saluting areas. Maintenance ramps are that. So I'm on the maintenance ramp. And there's pallets sitting there, and I'm talking to somebody, right? One of my Marines or somebody, and I'm sitting down on this pallet, right? So there's a stack of two pallets, so it's maybe 8 inches off the ground, and so we're sitting there, my cover's off, right? And I'm sitting there. Four of my Marines go walking by. What do you think they do? They salute, right?
Obviously, right?
Exactly. Part of the harassment package, right? This is what we do to officers. And so I look up and say, "Fucking really?" Right? And you can hear him go, "Oh, fuck." Like, "Oh, we're going to fucking play reindeer games with the company commander, the guy who does NJP on everybody's fucking ass." "Really? Or do you want to hold that salute, or do you want to cut it yourself before I stand up?" And like, "Sorry, sir." I'm like, "Do not fuck with me."
I distinctly recall doing this at PA school, as
right.
a matter of fact.
Right. And you know,
there were officers who were attending the same school who would just want to be going. They just wanted to smoke a cigarette, man. They just wanted to step outside the back of the building and smoke a cigarette. And we were not having it.
And so, but they would laugh, right? And that's how the question would come about. I'd fuck with them like they fucked with me. But you know what? The method to that is using humor to open doors to yourself. So then as a leader, you can have access to them and influence their lives. And, you know, if you're a leader, if you won't go there, you're not a leader. You're just another dickhead that's in charge for a while. And to me, I say that about mental health, about, you know, should leaders educate themselves so that they can make a difference? Well, if half your guys, you know, have had a traumatic event in their past, probably not a bad idea. But if you won't go there with them, if you won't love them, like General Mattis's quote is saying, if you won't love them, you're not a fucking leader, man. You're just the next asshole in charge, you know, and they won't remember you. They will not remember you. But I'll tell you what, but if you love them, if their problems become your problems, they'll never forget you.
I agree. Absolutely.
So we should all seek to that. So anyway, I want to thank you for coming on and taking this blast of joy in the face today. I hope I hope in some way, shape, or form you benefited from my reckless enthusiasm. But
I think that we all do. You know, this is I think that it happens like maybe every third or fourth episode. You and I end up just going down this rabbit hole, but it's because it's so important. So, you know, until people start complaining to us, like, okay, guys, we get it. I'm happy to keep doing
right.
it.
Let me tell you, when somebody looks at you and says, the only reason I'm alive is because of you, I'd be dead if I didn't cross paths with you. I mean, you don't need any more, right? You don't need any more fuel on the fire than that.
That's it, man.
And so, but I'm going to get you up to Montana, and I'll figure out a way to pay for it. And because I want you to see this thing, because I think it's a perfect story for Sandbox. The environment that these guys create to do it is perfect. And again, we can be an agent of change in this nation, and the credibility of Marines and the way they served in our relentless pursuit of whatever we pursued. In this case, it would be the relentless pursuit of better mental health and happiness we can share with a lot of people and impact lives. So I mean, but you got to see it. And
I'm down. What's cooler than that? I'm in.
September 12th. So write it down.
Bro, I'll write it down. You got it.
All right, bud. Alex, thank you.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, I mean, you came on. You got the shotgun blast of joy to the face, and you're going to get a free trip out of it. Like,
what more could I ask for?
What a productive morning.
This is a full service press appearance.
Hey, and oh, by the way, the food's awesome.
Hey, I was already sold, but now you got me that much better.
There you go. All right, man. I'll talk to you.
Have a good one.
Alex Hollings on a Monday. Let me read you an email. I'm with the last guy. Holy shit, man. No, I mean, you know, when I talk about this stuff, I'm just speaking the truth. I don't know how to do it any other way. And now, as I do it more, in the brief, there's more stories and vignettes of people that have been impacted by this in the last 19 months and whose lives have been changed, who then change other lives, who then change other lives. And so it's not a theoretical thing for me anymore. If you do this, I believe. I don't say that. I fucking know. And that's what I told the board that day when they were talking about, you know, might this be a good idea? Oh, you could take the might right out of it. I'm going to tell you what will happen. And they saw it this past week. And so, extremely exciting stuff. I also, you know, I told everybody I had a phone call with the VA and that went okay. And so we'll see where that goes. I keep my fingers crossed, but you know, again, VA is big, big medicine. And, you know, a big part of what the VA does is risk mitigation, liability mitigation. And so I'm not sure ultimately post-traumatic winning is a good fit for them for whatever reason. So anyway, Grant Newsham is going to join us tomorrow. If you haven't downloaded the 3 Goals and 10 Commandments, post-traumatic winning to your phone, do that shit. Do that shit. Okay? Also, if you haven't done an inventory and said to yourself, you know, what makes me happy? How do I do more of that? Who are the people that make me happy? How do I get more of them in my life? If you haven't done that inventory, do it. Do it. Because there is no secret in terms of being happy. Do the things you're passionate about. Do the things that make you happy. And then live selflessly, giving of yourself, and watch. I mean, come on. As I was in Denver, my cousin Tom calls me. He's like, hey, what's going on? He goes, how was your week? So I give him the blast of joy to the face. And I said, never in a million years would I have thought that I'd be doing this. And then he says this, me neither. And I said, what the fuck did that mean? He said, nothing. I said, hey, you better be careful, asshole. Yeah, my cousin Tom. But anyway, have a great day on a Monday. And again, with much gratitude in my heart for, you know, all the BarX people, the people at the Two Rivers Lodge, the people at the Kingfisher Lodge, and Neil Clark in Helena, Montana. God bless all of you for what you do. But most importantly, a reminder to the Marines that were up there who I met, right? Get after it. Get after it. You all, each one of you has a new mission, and that is to help people, to use your traumatic experiences as a trampoline, right? To vault your happy ass to a new place. And in doing that, you'll take a whole bunch of people with you who will then take people with them. So get after it. Don't be fucking around. On a Monday, Almarine Radio. Hold on. To my daughter, Catherine, happy birthday. Happy 27th birthday. To everybody else, go out there and change somebody's life. There is no drug like in the world. So on a Monday, now, Almarine Radio. It's never over and it's never out. Right? Because Almarine Radio wins. Right? Almarine Radio wins. I